Welcome to Empowered, Mind Body Inspiration. The mind is the map to wholeness, wellness, health. The heart is the key to genius and inspiration. Join me and my guests as we explore how to release and rewire into who you truly are, unique, whole, and empowered. Please like, share, and subscribe. Spiral up, spiral out. Welcome, everyone. Today, we have Melissa Mayer, a holistic physical therapist and author of Recovering My True Self, which is about her journey of donating her kidney to her husband and the associated transformation. Welcome, Melissa.
Thank you, Jane, for having me.
You know, that is such a fascinating story and happened to so few of us that we're going to start there, but you have so much knowledge to share right from Buddhism and your travels in the East. So let's start there and then see where this goes.
Sounds good.
So your husband must have had, did he have like kidney disease or something happened where you knew that you would... that he would need a kidney at some point?
Yes, he has a rare genetic disorder called Dehn's disease that was actually only discovered recently, really. And we met one of the researchers at Columbia who had discovered the gene. So that was kind of pretty miraculous. But the bottom line was he always had protein in his urine since he was a young child, and he was followed by, you know, some of the best nephrologists in New York City at Columbia Presbyterian, and I'd say probably the world. And they followed him and they always knew at some point he was going to need a kidney transplant as an adult. And they didn't know when, they didn't know the progression, considering how, you know, little is known about Dehn's disease specifically, but the bottom line was he was being followed for, you know, as a teenager and into his 20s and when we were married. And then when I was pregnant with my first daughter, 10, who's now 10. So 10 years ago, when my husband was a medical resident, I was a physical therapist. We were living in New York City. We were married and I was pregnant and we were sitting in the office of the midwife getting ready to hear the heartbeat of our first child. And he had seen a new nephrologist because his previous one had retired. And he came to the appointment and I knew something was on his mind, but he didn't want to talk about it. He said, we're here for the baby. But then we were waiting for a while, as we often do in practitioners' offices. And finally I said, come on, spill it. What's going on? And he said, well, the new doctor says, I'm going to have the transplant sooner rather than later. So it was pretty alarming, you know, the timing of being pregnant and all of that. But at the same time, I said, you know, I kind of was grounded and said, okay, so what's step one? And he said, finding a donor. So we were lucky. We had a lot of family and friends that volunteered to get tested to be a donor. And the best match was me. So we decided that I would be the donor. And once that was decided, the nephrologist said, you know what, you have a living, willing donor. We have the paperwork. Everything is all set up. So now we'll just monitor your creatinine. And when it gets to, you know, the level that, you know, we feel is too high, then we'll go through with the transplant. And we don't really know, we can't really give you a time frame on how long that will be. So miraculously, it was 7 years from that point that, until it was really like the time to schedule the surgery. So we had those 7 years to just, you know, I had my daughter and then I had another daughter. We moved out of New York City to the East End of Long Island to where we live now, in the Hamptons, beautiful beach nature community. So we put it in the back of our minds and lived our lives. And then in 2018, it was time. You know, he had gone back to the nephrologist. They saw his creatinine level and said, you know, it's 5.0 and now it's really time. So we kind of were scrambling, doing chest x-rays and blood work and all the necessary diagnostic tests, meeting with psychiatrists and all the long checklist of things that are involved to actually schedule and have a transplant.
It's quite the miracle that you could be a donor as well.
Yes, yes. There were so many miracles. And that was really what led to what I call in my book, The Divine Wake Up I Experienced After I Woke Up from the Surgery. I mean, I was a student of A Course in Miracles. I still am now more deeply than ever. I had just started reading the book shortly before the transplant. And now, you know, I'm a lifelong student because it was amazing mm-hmm. that we had experienced so many miracles, me being the donor, connecting with, you know, the amazing doctors and people that identified what was wrong and managed it so well. And then the fact that we had those 7 years to live our, you know, to raise our children and raise our babies. And I was able to breastfeed and do all the things I wanted to do without having to think about that. Mm-hmm. And then the surgery itself, waking up, surviving, and honestly, you know, thriving really on the other side of it all. So it was all a miracle. There were so many miracles and I'm so grateful for all of it.
Yeah. So that's what inspired the book, your book of transformation, was this awakening to how synchronicity and miracles can take place.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I did get a premonition the December before the surgery. So we had the surgery in August. So I'd say, you know, almost a good 9 months before the surgery, I did have a premonition that I was going to write a book, which surprised me, surprised my husband, because I'm a physical therapist by trade. I was reading The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron, which is a book about recovering your creative self. So I was doing a lot of writing as part of that 12-week self-study course, which is incredible. And I highly recommend to anybody. So I was, you know, doing all that and uncovering all that. And I've always been, you know, a student of metaphysics and holistics. I'm a yoga teacher, meditation. So I have always loved kind of, you know, inner work. And so I was doing a lot of it and said, I don't know what I'm going to write a book about, but I have this vision that I'm going to write a book and I don't know why and or what. And it was at times really amazing. And then other times felt really kind of almost silly, like, what are you, crazy? But then when in April, when they said, you know, the transplant is going to happen soon, we have to get it scheduled, I said, well, I guess I have some more content for my book, you know? So, you know, it did kind of come before, but then I realized, you know, the timing of how it all happened and the kind of inner journey clearing work leading up to the surgery is what allowed for such a profound transformation in the wake up and the connection to myself and to spirit and just recovery as a whole.
Yes. It must have been quite the journey. And how does the premonition come? They often come in whispers, you know, which make us question them.
Yeah, it was just, I mean, I'm a big fan of Esther Hicks and you know, how she channels Abraham. And it was just a thought that just kind of translated into words. And I just blurted it out to my husband. We were sitting on the couch one night and there was a full moon I had noticed. And, you know, it was right after my birthday and just kind of, you know, a time where you're just feeling really kind of powerful and allowing. And I just blurted out. I said, I think I'm going to write a book. It just came to me in this way that I really couldn't question it. It was a thought that came and just came out of my mouth.
Yeah. And it's about recovering your true self.
Yes. Well, recovery in a lot of different ways. So recovering, you know, coming of age as I was growing up. And I'm a highly sensitive person. And I discovered that through the writing of the book, even though I'm sure many would say my whole life, it was pretty obvious, but like a lot of things, we sometimes are the last to see it. So just growing up as a highly sensitive child and not really understanding why I felt the energy of people and why I felt things so deeply, particularly change. And then discovering or starting to consume alcohol in high school and realizing what a wonderful tool it was for me at the time to just numb all those feelings. And then going into college and, you know, continuing that cycle of, you know, struggling with food and alcohol in terms of numbing me so I didn't feel so much and not really understanding why or anything about that process and journey. And then after college, traveling to California, you know, to just find myself and look for answers and just lots of seeking. And then coming to the realization that I wanted that I'm a healer and how to go about that. So going to physical therapy school, and I'm sure any parent can attest to just the transformation of being a mother and being a parent, and really embracing attachment parenting, simplicity parenting, and Waldorf education. And all of that just kind of layering on top of itself, doing my yoga teacher training, having a meditation practice, and reading, you know, hundreds of self-help books from Louise Hay to Wayne Dyer, Marianne Williamson, and, you know, Eckhart Tolle, anybody I could find and read, and just, they were all so valuable. And then having the transplant, and then afterward, having that divine wake up, feeling so clear and calm and connected that I decided not to consume alcohol anymore. I said, everything is just coming out so clear. And I could see now my sensitivity is a gift, not a hindrance. And I don't have to numb it. I can, you know, manage it through writing and through my meditation practice. And I can, you know, navigate all of, you know, my mind chatter through my meditation practice and through my writing. So just recovering from all those different things, you know, parenting to alcohol, to food, to everything in between. And then of course, recovering from the surgery itself and recovering from alcohol and just, and everything altogether.
Yeah. It's quite the planet we live on, and such a veil that, you know, to see your true self, it takes study and effort, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I read The Alchemist after I graduated physical therapy school, and I was traveling through Spain, and just that story and journey resonated with me as it's resonated with millions. I mean, and you know, I remember a line from the book, the realization of one's destiny is a person's only obligation. And, you know, that was Santiago's mission and journey. It's just, you know, the realization of his destiny. And I think that's why we're here and we're all on that journey. Maybe it's, you know, more obvious to some, but I think that's where we all are, and we all are one, and we're connected through that commonality of, you know, coming here and extending love and realizing, you know, how to do that and who we are in doing that.
Yeah. And it is realizing that destiny that gives you your true purpose and drive and desire when you get it. But
absolutely. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be, I think we get stuck in, you know, is it in my job? Is it, you know, am I doing the right job, you know, in realizing my destiny? And I don't even think it has to be that specific, even though we want it to be that specific, you know, just the realization of just, am I connected to myself and in spirit in this moment, in what I'm doing, wherever I am and whoever I'm with? And, you know, that for me, I had struggled for that many years of like, what does my destiny look like in terms of where do I live and what job should it be in my career and, you know, my relationships and just getting so lost in the specifics and, you know, the monkey mind and mind chatter of it all. Mm. And then, you know, through A Course in Miracles and through my divine wake up, just realizing it's just connection to myself and to spirit. That's it. And everything else just comes from that, you know, secondarily, that's the primary piece of my destiny.
Yeah. And being quiet enough to listen to the whispers that come often. Yes.
And distinguishing which ones are divine whispers from spirit and which one are ones, you know, from the ego mind, took me lots of practice for many, many years, and getting really quiet for a long time, I think, is what helps distinguish those things.
Yes. Tell us about that, because I mean, that is a major...
Well, I heard Wayne Dyer say once, in any moment we can decide if we want to host God or be a hostage to the ego. And I think, you know, I've struggled with that for many years. I still do. In knowing right now, am I hosting God or am I a hostage to my ego right now? Which one is it? And, you know, A Course in Miracles talks about a miracle is a shift from fear to love. So now I can usually boil it down pretty quickly and say, well, is this a loving thought? Is this a kind thought? Is this a kind gesture towards myself or towards someone else? You know, this problem that I'm dealing with, like, where's the love in this? Because that's, you know, A Course in Miracles says that's the only thing that's real. Everything else is an illusion. So the ego part of saying, well, I was victimized, and then, you know, I can see the patterns better these days of saying, nope, that's my ego saying I wanted this person to be this way and act this way, and they didn't do what my ego would have liked to have happened. So, you know, kind of understanding that now, but through the writing of my book, especially just staying really focused to, I knew I had divine energy coming through me that wanted to come into the book, but then I also had to, you know, kind of guard it and protect it from, you know, the ego parts of my mind saying like, who are you to write a book? This is ridiculous. Like, you think this is actually going to be a book someday, you know, just like that destruction, you know, the ego has just very destructive thoughts about ourselves. And then they manifest too as destructive thoughts about other people. So I can, you know, that's kind of usually my tall tale sign. If is it fear? Is it coming from like fear-based emotions? Then it's an illusion. Is it coming from love? Is there love there? Then that's spirit and that's what's real.
And what are some of the things you do? Like when, like we all go into that fear ego-based place, what are some of the things you do to return yourself to listening to, you know, source or your true purpose?
Well, I think what you mentioned earlier, just kind of becoming still, like usually it happens when I'm moving too fast and thoughts in my head are moving too fast. And I just kind of have to go, you know, somewhere and just kind of shut it all down and just say, okay, you know, because I easily, as a highly sensitive person, I get very easily overstimulated and overwhelmed. And that's usually when it all kind of starts to unleash. But just getting really quiet, getting still. And if, you know, the more overstimulated I am, the longer it takes, but just kind of like getting still and coming back and just giving it that space and that time. And then, you know, at the back of my book too, I put a toolbox. I mean, there's lots of tools in terms of, you know, taking a walk, smelling an essential oil. I mean, there's, you know, exercise. There's so many ways that I think can help us get us back on track. But a lot of times just giving it space, quieting down, not trying to overanalyze it. Usually the situation needs, for me, like the momentum is too high that I have to kind of like release the momentum and just kind of leave it. And then I notice once I give it that space, then all of a sudden the next morning or whenever, you know, the resolution kind of comes. So sometimes it takes time, you know, sometimes it happens kind of fairly quickly, but sometimes like it needs a full day to just be like, I have to let this go. And I just have to get quiet and I have to take a walk and I have to just kind of change my direction and focus. And then a lot of times after I have a good night's sleep and I wake up in the morning, I'm like, oh, I see now. This was, you know, just all those answers, they just come. And they often don't come from other people. They you know, all the answers are in ourselves. We know. Just a lot of times we have to take the time to give it space to tap into it.
Right. And let go of the pressure of having to know the answer, because it does need that space and that listening. I often say to myself, I don't, like, just for today, I'm going to let go of having to know, you know, and that gives it that space and takes the pressure off.
I love that. Yeah. Just for today, I'm going to let this go. And then tomorrow, because we do have this, you know, this goal oriented pressure society where, you know, this needs to be addressed now. And it's like, no, this needs to have space now. And then I'll come back to it. It's like, it will come back.
Yeah. Well, it's like, there's this busy signal that you can't get through to yourself.
Yes.
When there's too much pressure.
And sometimes it's that aggravates you and like triggers you. Like, no, I'm going to keep trying until I get there, and realizing, oh, it just needs that moment. It just needs that space.
Yeah. And then, you know, I'll say to someone, you know, just go quiet, meditate, slow down. And even that is, it's like a concept that I wish we would teach it at school, because even that is a whole learning, you know, like you've read all these books, you've done all this practicing, but what would you say to someone who's never meditated, never tried to quiet their mind?
Well, I'd say it's not as intimidating as it sounds. It's, it can start so simple with a deep breath in and out, just in the moment, and giving, you know, turning to your breath and taking a moment away from something isn't succumbing to it. It isn't giving up. It isn't weak. If anything, you know, meditative stillness really brings a lot of strength and empowerment. But it like everything, it's a practice, but it's not complicated. It literally just requires, you know, I mean, you can start with 1 minute, 1 minute of setting a timer. We all have phones that have timers on them. So 1 minute of just noticing the breath coming in and coming out, and not ever putting the pressure on yourself that you're supposed to make all your thoughts go away. Thoughts are a function of the mind. We have minds. That's what they do. That's their purpose. So, you know, just like being gentle about yourself. If you're someone who's like, well, I can't clear my mind. You don't have to clear your mind. You just have to learn to, there's some very simple techniques, focusing on the breath, saying a mantra, looking at a candle, just things that will help connect you to your body and take you out of the thinking brain.
Yeah. And to realize that our mind and our body really isn't who we are.
Mm. So absolutely. That was amazing when I reading Eckhart Tolle when I was in my 20s in grad school, and realizing that I wasn't the thinker, because, you know, people would say, oh, you're a good person, and in my mind I'd say, no, I'm not. I have all these terrible thoughts that cross my mind. And then when Eckhart Tolle said, you're not your thoughts, I was like, really? I'm not these destructive thoughts that cross my mind? And reading that book, and I had such a sense of freedom that I'm not that thinker. That's just thoughts. That's just ego. I'm love. I'm light. I'm source. Everybody is that. And realizing that there was such a profound sense of freedom.
Right. And that at the snap of your fingers, you can choose to be something else.
Yes.
Which is really empowering too.
Absolutely.
But it feels, like you say, it's not complicated, but we make it complicated.
Yeah. Our minds make everything complicated. Oh, I don't have the time. Oh, that's, you know, something monks do. I'm too busy for something like that. You know, this is going to make me weak. This is going to make me vulnerable. I need to stay strong, you know, but thankfully it is becoming, I think a lot of that is changing. I mean, professional seminars at companies now hire, you know, motivational speakers, and they start with maybe not the word meditation, but they'll call it mindfulness. So they'll, you know, just, you know, they have ways of making it very secular and very like good for business and production, because it really is, you know, I mean, it does work on that level. So I think there is so much more shifting in awareness and perception around the concept of meditation and mindfulness, and how, you know, I think we all know how it's pretty obvious how much we're consuming and how much we're on devices. And, you know, we all know how it makes us feel, and that we need to take breaks from it or we're not going to survive.
Yeah. And you can feel it drain you.
Yeah. And I think I think today it's not like most people know what's good for that. Most people know we have to spend less time on our technology. We need to eat better. We need to exercise more. It's just a matter of integrating it all. And that's where I tell people, like, meditation and mindfulness, or even if you just want to say, you know, quieting your thoughts, and that's that's where you can figure out how to integrate it. That's how you can say, you know what, I can take a walk during my lunch break, or you know what, a friend of mine's been dying for me to go to this meditation class on, you know, maybe I'll just go, you know, and that usually happens from those still thoughts when you kind of take a breath. So all of a sudden those ideas of, oh, I know I need to eat better. And then, you know, which doesn't help because you're feeling shameful about it. But then when you kind of come to a quiet place and connect with who you are, say, you know what, someone was telling me about this farm share that I can sign up for. Maybe I'll try that. And then before you know it, they're sending emails about how to make, you know, Brussels sprouts and different sorts of vegetables that you never even really bought before. And before you know it, you're in this new cycle and pattern, all because you just kind of took a breath and allowed yourself to do what you know you need to do.
Yeah. Do you think that there's a possibility that there's an agenda to shut us down from realizing how powerful we are as spiritual individuals?
I don't know how productive it is to think that. So I don't really go there in thinking of that. I mean, I definitely think there's systems in place. There's a whole concept of, you know, fear and ego, and then that manifests into, you know, corporate greed and you know, things that are more physical that, you know, do kind of victimize us. But ultimately, that rabbit hole, I don't find all that productive.
Yeah. I know. I just question, how did humanity end in this place where we don't realize our potential and our connection? You know, like, it's such a place to be, planet Earth.
Well, I mean, I read A Course in Miracles every morning, and, you know, that was kind of channeled and came to be in the 70s. And sometimes when I read that and it says, you know, you think your ego, you think, like, I mean, like, literally thing, like, I'm reading this and it's saying, I'm like, how does this know exactly how destructive my ego mind and the thoughts can be and the destruction I see manifesting around me in the physical world? You know, this was written in the 70s before some of these problems even existed, because I just think it was kind of just like inevitable in the human condition. So, you know, to kind of go into it, that's not really the way out. You know, I mean, like, darkness is the absence of light. So if you're in a dark room, turn on the light. Don't have to, you know, wade through the darkness saying, why is it here? And how far does it go? How long does it go? And who made it here? And who did this? It's like, turn on the light, you know? That's what's going to get you out of the darkness. And that's what's going to help you get other people out of the darkness. And that's what's going to help you, you know, realize why you're here, like we were saying earlier, and what our destiny is here. So I try not to analyze the darkness too much. I mean, I don't like to live in a bubble either. I mean, I stay involved and informed in the world, very actively, in fact, but I don't like to get too analytical about the darkness.
Yeah. And sometimes you do have to swim through that darkness to turn on the light and
but again, I think we all live that and know that. So that's why I feel like, why analyze it when we all, it doesn't take more than a second to ask anybody about, you know, the darkness they've experienced in their personal lives and our collective darkness and suffering that we're feeling. I mean, it's out there and it's very obvious. So, you know, why I don't like to really dive deeper in it than I need to.
Yeah. Just swim through it calmly.
Yeah. Try and get out of it and try and find my way to that light. Cause I can't help anybody else if I can't find my own way to the light, you know, to that switch.
Yeah. So when you woke from surgery, did you feel even stronger, this connection?
Yes. I, when I woke up, I mean, you know, coming off of anesthesia, I'm sure as many can relate, you know, it's like you have those bizarre, crazy dreams. I mean, like, these hallucinations, and I just was waking up being like, what is this? Where am I? What happened? And that frantic feeling set in, but then like right before that feeling and right after that feeling, like I should go back, right before I felt that franticness, I felt just this, you know, white light. I mean, literally just like embodying me saying, you're going to be fine. Like miracle granted, this is all going to be fine. Mm. And then I had that, you know, physical wake up and just that franticness. And then I closed my eyes again and it was said, I'm still here. This is still here. This isn't going anywhere. This is yours now. This is yours forever. So it was just a matter of just, you know, coming in and out of it. And then
what is yours, Melissa? The connection?
My connection? I mean, just God.
Yeah. So they were saying this is yours and the what is yours is the connection to God.
Yes, the connection to spirit, the connection of spirit that will just kind of soothe you and keep you safe no matter what the situation. Just I felt going into surgery the day before, like I had a moment of spiritual surrender where, you know, I just felt like I got on my knees and I said, God, if that's who you are, I don't know. I've always considered myself spiritual, but not religious. So I don't know who's up there and what's up there, but I need a miracle here. So please, you know, if you're up there, like I need you. And then I felt like when I woke up, it was like, I'm here and I'm not going anywhere. You know, just the divine source saying like, I'm here with you. And I've always been here. You just didn't see me, but now you do. And you know, this is it. Like you're going to be fine and your husband's going to be fine. Your family's going to be fine. You're going to ultimately thrive from all this. And I mean, that's how it all happened. It was completely miraculous.
And the feeling too, that you always are connected, right? Whether physically or not physically, everything's okay. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. You can always shift away from the fear. The love is always here. No matter how far you deviate from it, it's always here. It will never leave you.
Right. And so there's an element of like, you did ask, you did say,
yes,
show me, right? Do you think that's part of it?
Yes, absolutely. I said, help me. I mean, I definitely got on my knees and I think a lot of, I mean, that's why I wrote a book too. I love reading stories of, you know, people's transformation or people after, you know, after they've had a death of a loved one or you know, a terrible diagnosis, you know, just moments where they just hit rock bottom and said, I need help here. Mm-hmm. I think that is really essential. So, you know, saying help and kind of hitting that moment, that rock bottom moment of like, I don't know what's going on, but I'm at the bottom here. And so I did hit that moment and I'm so glad I did surrender and say help, because I think that's what really led to the receiving of the help.
Right. So beautiful. Any other words of wisdom that you could share with us or anything else from your book that is really profound and could just leave people wanting to read it?
Well, I'd say there's a quote by Lao Tzu that says, a man who knows others is wise. A man who knows himself is enlightened. Mm. And, you know, my book was, you know, the telling of my story. And I had thought a lot about, if I'm going to write a book, should I kind of really say, here's how you should improve your life? And, you know, just the guidance I got was, no, tell your story, because there'll be less kind of emotional triggering and resistance. And, you know, when you hear someone's story, that's when little pieces start to resonate, you know, along the way. So, you know, tell the story, you know, tell your story and, you know, show kind of like your dedication and commitment to wanting to understand who you are, and then allow that to kind of awaken people to where they are, because you don't know where people are. And, you know, that's the way that you can help. And that's the way that you can share this transformation beyond yourself to others. And, you know, I've always felt, you know, I was a healer. I am a healer. So, you know, through physical therapy. And then after my divine wake up thinking, going back to, you know, my work as a physical therapist, connecting, you know, the East and the West, the, you know, the holistic part of it, and saying, how can I bring this to others? Well, I'm just going to really create a space where I can really do deeper healing with them, not in a traditional clinic where I'm too distracted by documentation, insurance regulations, you know, overscheduling, et cetera, and create a space where I can really kind of vessel and channel healing energy to others. And not because I have the magic healing wand to tap on them, but I can just kind of create that space to allow spirit to come through me and go to them, and then connect them to their self, and then back up to spirit, and kind of, you know, be like foster that connection with others.
Right. And help people find their place, their beauty, their connection. That's so incredible. I love it.
Yeah. Thank you. It's, I mean, I love working with people now in this kind of different, newer, evolved format of just, you know, a lot of times they have injuries and, you know, they've worked with physical therapists before, but then they come to me and they find me and I can see like they're ready for the deeper healing, like so many of us are. And so it doesn't even oftentimes take all that long or all that much. It's almost like them calling me and then coming into the space is like, I know what I need to do. I'm like, of course you do.
Yeah. Incredible. And they've probably asked, right? And it's just, it's their next step. So beautiful. How do people find you, hun?
So the best way is through my website, www.melissamayer.org, MelissaMayer.org. I'm on Facebook as Melissa Anthony Mayer, and my Instagram is Mel May Evolve. But my website, MelissaMayer.org, really has my blog and more about my holistic physical therapy and what I do, and podcast interviews like this and videos, and really just a good place where all my work kind of lives.
So beautiful. And I'll include those in the show notes.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And for everyone out there, don't forget, don't give away your power to anyone else. Be the creator of your own life. Spiral up, spiral
out. Remember, don't give away your power to anyone else. Be the creator of your own life. You can find more inspiring episodes on 14 different platforms, including iTunes, Spotify, and empoweredhealth.com. Be a part of Thrive Tribes. Be the change in Thrivevolution at thrivetribehub.com. And join me and my fellow change makers at Health Tribe, Body, Mind, and Soul on Facebook. Spiral up, spiral out.